Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, on 95.1 FM, on 277 Freeview, online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and you would be listening to the Stonkini Jules Sirkin, but she's making the tea at the moment.
Tea lady.
Yeah. So, thank you for that, Jules. She's brought the tea in. Let me tell you. Wonderfully, not wonderful, Eurostar has announced its services to the continent will not be returning to Kent.
Oh, no.
This year. No trains destined for Europe have pulled into Ashford or Ebbsfleet Station since the start of the coronavirus lockdown in March 2020. The withdrawal of services has sparked anger among some passengers who now have to travel to London to catch services. We all filled in a big petition, over 100,000 signatures, but it didn't sway them at all. They explain the firm is concentrating its efforts on stabilising the business, and a spokesman said Eurostar services will not be stopping at Ebbsfleet or Ashford, or and they will not be going direct to Disney in 2024. And they say we can't confirm that we'll do anything different in 2025 either.
It's so awful because, you know, they had all those strikes and kerfuffles in London recently around Christmas.
Yep.
And people were saying, I don't know about it, but people were saying that had that been going, it would have eased a lot of the pressure on, I think it was King's Cross or somewhere, there were just loads of cancellations, there were driver strikes and all the usual.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've spent all that money around Ebbsfleet and it's just like a white elephant?
Well, same with Ashford. They built the whole international station there with thousands of car parking spaces, and it's not good
for
anything.
It's a white elephant.
It's just a complete white elephant. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Although I did see that Richard Branson has put in a bid to run European trains.
Oh, wow.
But I don't know, if he's going to get very far.
It's
with
such
that.
A shame. I was saying to, I was talking to somebody on Twitter, now known as X, but we call it Twitter, and she lives in Normandy. And I was saying, Simon, you know, my new husband and I used to go to Normandy a lot, and it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And with COVID and everything that happened, the French I saw were just so strict about going into shops, going into restaurants and things like that, that it sort of put me off going to France, and we sort of got out of the habit. But there's nothing nicer than nipping over and having some beer and going to Belgium.
Bruges. Well, I mean, we live 10 minutes from the Eurotunnel entrance. Mm. And so for us, I've never really fancied getting on Eurostar. I've always preferred to do the cross-channel ferry.
Yeah. Drive.
And I mean, the tunnel.
The channel.
And the channel.
Don't they call it the channel?
They do call it the channel.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is basic economics, isn't it? I mean, this is the scary bit. We don't like this. It's basic economics. If people were queuing up to get on the train at Ashford in sufficient numbers, they'd run a service that stopped at Ashford.
Yeah.
The reality is, we'd like it to be there. They invested a lot of money on it, but it was a political fix to try and curry some votes for putting the tunnel through people's front gardens. Yeah. Oh, you can have a station at Ashford and you'll get some benefit from it. Mm. The reality is, they put the station there and hardly anybody used it. Yeah. When the services ran, I used to drive past that car park and you could see from the road that there were about 10 cars in a car park designed to hold several hundred cars.
Yeah, but doesn't it take a few years for people to get in the habit? You know, it's like Manston, isn't it? You know, I used Manston. I flew everywhere for a fiver, you know, Dublin and wherever. And, you know, I love the idea of a small hub airport, but you know, it takes, you've got to start using it. And
okay. Right. We'll come back to this conversation, but I need to, introduce our next guest, Mr. Tom Finn of Lead Strategy. Let's hear what Tom's got to say. And then when we've heard from Tom, we'll come back to this conversation.
I can't wait.
Absolutely. I knew that.
Yeah. I'm champing at the bit.
Well, it's something you knew, Paul. That's
exactly.
I'm going to put that in my diary.
I know because she sent me a note about it.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I winked.
Yeah. Here we go. Let's hear from Tom.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show this Tuesday afternoon, Mr. Tom Finn. And Tom is from Lead Strategy. Tom, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Afternoon, Paul. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm absolutely delighted to be here. Thank you.
It's a real pleasure. Some of our more astute listeners will guess that maybe you're from Ireland, from your accent. Whereabouts are you based, Tom?
I surely am an Irishman. I'm based in the southeast coast of Ireland, so I'm about 1 hour south of Dublin city centre. Seems to be the landmark for most people. About an hour south of that, in County Wexford.
Wexford, yeah.
Or County Wexford, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I used to be a big fan. There was Sky had a TV programme about Wexford on a Sunday evening, hosted by Sam Kelly. Can't remember, Wexford Matters. I used to watch it regularly. It was brilliant. It was fabulous. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Tom Finn. So, Tom, I've been looking at your website. Mate, you're a bit of an overachiever on the academic side, aren't you? You've got a few degrees there, haven't you?
I have a few behind me, all right, and it's funny, Paul, because would you believe my dad, his biggest fear in life is that I wouldn't finish secondary school.
Right. Well, you made up for that afterwards, didn't you?
I made up for that.
Do you actually have?
I came out, and well, I started off with an apprenticeship, and probably one of the greatest moves I ever made in my life was doing an apprenticeship. What a fantastic start in life for anyone, and I took it from there, and after I qualified for my apprenticeship in electrical instrumentation, I worked for a while, and then decided, you know what, I'm going to jump back into the academic pool and see would they have me. So I got my degree then in mechatronics, which is an engineering degree that I gained through Sligo IT, and it really took off from there. I had the bug then, and I went back again.
Between your teeth, didn't you?
Picked up another degree there then, and I suppose around the same time as I was starting I decided to start a company. I said, you know what, let's see, can we advance the qualifications again? So I went back and done the Masters in Lean Enterprise Excellence through Waterford Institute of Technology, and sure, look at that, that was never enough, and I kept going again. And got a diploma at the Institute of Directors, and I'm back again. For my sins again, I'm doing a PhD in the business school in Southeastern Technical University.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck with that. I mean, that is really impressive, mate. Really impressive. So, Tom, tell us about what you do. Tell us about Lead Strategy.
Yeah, so I opened Lead Strategy in a sender pod. February 2019, I decided, you know what, I'll start my own bit of a venture, seeking to get a company off the ground and seeking to get something going out of it. I was working in the business excellence sector at the time. I'd worked in pharmaceuticals, and I went into the food manufacturing side of it then. And I said, look, I suppose the reason why, Paul, was to challenge myself, number one, and then number two, I did see a need for, I suppose, smaller companies requiring lean and business excellence and strategy consultancy, if you want to put it that way, but also a practitioner as well. If someone wanted a practitioner, yeah, I was available for that, and I still am, and if someone wants a consultant, I'm still there and available for that as well. So I suppose the way the company is divided up, Paul, I look at lean enterprise excellence. So I provide consultancy service on that. But also, if people want me to come in and be part of a team, I've no problem in working that way either. I don't want to ever be known as just a consultant, because I'm a bit more than that, I like to think. I like to get my hands dirty as well. And I suppose an area as well that I did notice was, smaller companies, going around very, you could say nearly misguided, or they're chaotic state, and they just needed that bit of help. And the greatest way to help them was just, let's go back to the beginning here. Let's start from scratch here. What is it that you want to achieve? Where do you want to go? And can we set up a roadmap for you and bring you along there? So get more to the strategy domain there. But found a lot of companies really wanting that service and requiring that service.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think that's an incredibly important point that you've just made about going back to square one, going back and rethinking. 100 years ago, when I had a proper job working in corporates, I was a senior executive in a bank, and we kept messing about all the time with budgets. So every year they come to me and they go, can you cut 20 million off your budget? And I go, sure, what do you want me not to do? And they went, no, we want you to do everything, but just cut 20 million. And I said, why don't we do zero-based budgeting? Why don't we start from scratch and then just build a budget from there, rather than, chop and change every year, add to it, add 10% for, you know, this and take away 5% for that. So I think the point that you just made is incredibly important, is to go back to basics and think about what it is you're trying to do.
Absolutely. It's so important. As I say, people as well, all the organizations have, you'll even find from the C-suite and for smaller businesses, you'll see that they're actually so involved in the business, they're stuck in the weeds. They haven't got time to almost levitate back up and have a, and work on the business. Yeah. And that's where I try to help organizations. And that's where the help is required. I see a lot lately anyhow.
Yeah. Okay. All the stuff that you kind of touched on there, lean stuff and thinking things through from their core point of view, a fairly well known about in big corporates. I was going to say fairly well established, but there's still a lot of big corporates that don't do it, but they know about it at least. How do you find working with smaller businesses? Is there a lot of explaining in small detail what it's actually about before you actually convince someone to try it?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I see where what you're saying there, and you do see that people hear the word lean and they say, oh, we've heard about this, it's very good. We heard Toyota done a lot of good things with it, and we wouldn't mind giving it a try ourselves. It's very important, Paul, when you go in, that we actually start off with the fundamentals of lean, because we need everyone to understand, and that includes everyone in the organization from the top right through, what's it all about. And the respect for people element is such a huge part of it. It's not just a big bag of, it's not just a toolkit that you're arriving with. Yeah. It's a philosophy, and everyone has to buy into it. Everyone has to understand it. See, some people will see you coming to the door and they'll say, oh, lean equals mean. This guy is here to cut jobs. This guy is here to just slash budgets and move people out of the business, which is not the case at all. This is about working with people and doing more with less. And when I say less, I don't mean less people. I mean with less waste. That's a big part of it. We focus upon waste. We eliminate that waste. We get it out of there. And we grow the profit of the business. So we grow revenue, we cut out costs, and that grows the profit at the end of the day. And that's what we're really focused on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And in good times, I'm not sure we remember many good times at the moment from a corporate point of view, but in good times, you tend to grow fat, don't you? And, you know, it's not as... you know, you buy stuff that's frivolous sometimes, and because you can, and it doesn't necessarily help the business in any way, but you know, hey, you can afford it, so why not? So I guess a lot of what you're doing is trying to look at that and going, is this necessary? You know, do you need this?
Absolutely, Paul. And that's where we tie everything back to everything you do. In this context now, when we start introducing this lean philosophy, is it related to your overall objectives?
Yeah.
And not related to your objectives, why do you need it? What's it doing in there? It's just going to turn into a waste, and we're going to end up removing it someday. Yeah. So really thinking through, do you need this? What are you doing? Mm. Do you need this? Is this a serious part of it? If you do, yeah, let's invest in it. Let's have a look at that. What does that look like? But if not, it's not part of the, it's not going to be part of the game.
I mean, I'm not asking you to name clients, obviously, because that wouldn't work. But do you ever find yourself going, oh, you know, look, well, why have you got this? And you look at the boss, and you go, he's not going to give this up, is he? Even though they don't need it, he's not going to give this up. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, we in the business, we say about that, Paul, is that he's just not going to let go of the baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
From the arms. No, you do see that a lot. Yeah, it's especially if the if they've introduced something, if they brought it in, look, it might have worked very well. It might need. It might have come to the end of its run. But look, there's a lot of, you have to sit down with them. And again, it's back to respect for people part. And it's understanding that they have an emotional attachment to some things, and, but some things just have to go. It's for the greater good of the business.
Yeah, sure. Can you give us an overview, when you're first engaged by an organization to come along and help them and look at what they're doing, do you have a process that you start off with, you know, a certain set of things that you look at first?
Yeah, we do. So when I'm engaged by a client, first off, I want to understand what is it they're looking for. And we have a deep dive then on their actual, their business, look at their processes. In many aspects, you'll see organizations have been, smaller organizations in particular, you know, they're just, they've just been running by the seat of their pants kind of thing. You know, they've started a business and everyone's hands on and heads are down, they're working hard. And you talk about strategic plans and the likes, and there's probably none in place there. No, we haven't the time to do anything like that. So sometimes it's back to scratch. It's setting up mission, vision, values, understanding what, why we do it, how we do it, and what we're doing. And then you can build from there. If you want to start introducing a lean philosophy, then we can start off at the very basics of it with lean fundamentals. And then you can really build from there. You can go to Lean Plus programs, and you can go all the way then through to digital programs as well.
Okay, cool. So you actually in your practice, you actually look at digitalization and moving a business forward using technology.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a big part of it now as well. It's obviously we're in a digital era now. Everything is being controlled by AI. It's something I brought through from my engineering days as well, which is great being able to understand the engineering side of things and machine learning and all those aspects. But it's a huge part of it, really. And as I say, but we always try to get people, look, let's start off basic here. We're not going to jump straight into digitization here because we'll just be automating rubbish, if you want to put it that way.
Absolutely, yeah. The old gigo, garbage in, garbage out, you know. Absolutely. I mean, right now we're all talking about, you know, ChatGPT and AI and all those kind of things. What are you sensing from the small business community in general about their feel for this AI? Are people excited by it? Are people scared of it? People not knowing what it is? Or?
There's mixed emotions on it at the moment. There's some people that are very excited by you're talking to people, and you know, actually, I was only with a client there the other day, and they jumped into ChatGPT, which is great. It was grand, and was able to help them out. It actually sped up the process for them fairly quick. In fairness, there is a general apprehension out there as well, because people don't really understand much about it yet. And look, I think it's just something that a lot of people are sitting back. We're waiting for it to develop. We're waiting for to see what's going to emerge here. There is going to be great potential. If you listen to some of the, I suppose they're going to say the gurus on it, they'd nearly scare you. But we're going to have to see what comes out of this. But I suppose the general feel around the area at the moment is, yes, some parts that we're seeing now are quite good. And then there's, you know what, I don't know much about this thing. I'm going to stay away from it for a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's a fairly sensible strategy, actually, just to kind of feel your way through and see what happens and where things go. My background is actually in IT, and I'm very old, so I've been in IT over 50 years. And some of the things I see these days scare the hell out of me. I go, really? I wouldn't do that if I were you. But there you go. Tom, from your own business point of view, you launched in 2019, is that right?
That's right, yeah, 2019, yeah.
So you're 5 years old almost, yeah?
Nearly five, yeah, coming up now with anniversary in February.
There you go, we'll wait for the invite to the party, that'll be great. So where do you see yourself? Where do you see your business going next? Have you got plans for yourself? Or is it a Coles to Newcastle kind of job? You know, you don't think about what you're doing, you think about what everyone else is doing.
It was a bit of that, you know, but I suppose, look, I wouldn't be doing myself or the business much justice if I hadn't got my five-year plan in place. So, look, I do have a five-year plan. Yeah, we do. I want to grow the business. There's so much to do. We've came a long way in 5 years. I've came a long way in 5 years, and my initial plan was I'd give it 5 years, Paul, and if it wasn't working, we'd leave it at that. But, look, it's working. It's doing very well. But look, we want to grow it. My view for the company in 5 years' time is obviously going to be bigger, more clients, more get some employees involved, right, and see where it leads us then. We take another evaluation in 5 years' time.
Absolutely. Are you tending to find most of your work in Ireland, or are you working further afield? Are you working in the UK, in Europe?
Yeah, I'm, at the moment it's only in Ireland, but I am certainly open to UK and Europe. I don't mind traveling. I'm open to the world. We're a small world when you think about it now.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Tom, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Give us a shout out for your website so that people can find out more about you should they wish.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll find me at Lead Strategy, so that's LEEDstrategy.com. You check me out there. You'll also find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube. So jump in and follow me.
Absolutely. We'll put those links on the radio website as well. Tom, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. Absolute pleasure to talk to you. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
That was a fantastic Mr. Tom Finn.
Listening to his voice.
Yeah. All right. Of Lead Systems, talking about lean strategies and, yeah, you know, taking things back to basics to understand where we go from here. And it's such an important point. You know,
Do we go from here?
Yeah, exactly. But Simon Webster's going to join us now. Simon is a finance guru from Talis IFA. Simon, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello again, Paul.
It's lovely to have you back. Simon's a regular guest on the show with his wit and wisdom. This might interest you, and you may have an argument about this or not. I'm a great fan from my days when I had a proper job in corporate. I was responsible for a very large budget, and almost every year my bosses would come along and go, cut 20% off the budget, Paul. And I go, fine, what do you want me not to do? And they go, no, we want you to do everything, just don't pay for it. So I was a great believer in what's called zero-based budgeting, which is to take everything back to the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because what so many people do is they go, right, last year we spent £1 million, inflation's 5%, so we'll have 5% plus 5% for growth, so we'll add 10% to the budget, and we'll have a 1.1 million budget this year.
Mm-hmm.
Zero-based budgeting says we've got a budget of zero. What are we going to spend next year? And I think that's a much better way of approaching it. It takes a bit longer, but, you know, you don't then get out of hand with just adding stuff for the sake of adding it.
I once had a very interesting conversation with a friend of mine, which is not directly linked to what you're saying, but it's very similar vein. He had a business in Ashford. If I say too much, you'll identify the business. But his business got to the stage where he had about 25 people in the business, and they were able to order stuff for their semi-manufacturing jobs that they were doing. Mm. And they ordered what they thought they needed, and they always over-ordered. Mm. And they ended up with a factory full of off-cuts and bits and pieces that were no longer necessary. And when the recession hit, and I had this conversation about 15 years ago, and it stayed with me. When the recession hit about 15 years ago, whatever it was, I said, how are you doing? Because your business is going to be sensitive to this recession. He said, well, actually, our turnover is down, but I've managed to take £150,000 out of our costs, because every single purchase order that leaves the building must have my signature on it. And if I think they're over-ordering, I trim it back because I know what's necessary. So by effectively saying, what is the cost for this job, rather than just saying, well, we need £100 and I'll add 10% to be on the safe side, you just say, okay, well, we'll just take the 10% off. And that'll be right.
Yeah.
And it was. And yeah. That's how you just got to look at the bottom line all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And people that don't have a business background, and I see this sometimes in various organizations that I get involved with, they think, well, we've got some money, so we'll buy that and that should be okay. And you go, well, why do we need it? Could we buy better?
Yeah.
Could we buy different? Could we buy smarter?
Yeah.
Are we adding value? And they don't necessarily have the experience in the business community to ask that question. Is this going to add value to what we're doing?
Mm.
And if the answer is no, why are we doing it? But yeah. that's a really funny
question. And that's exactly my point. It is on track, because one of the things I found with budgets is I worked for a bank, as most people know, and when times were good and we were making tons and tons of money, it was no object. I remember one, IBM introduced colour screens. This is how long ago it was. IBM introduced colour screens into their computer terminals. And this is in the late 1970s, okay? Mm. They were £4,000 each,
mm.
Yeah? A huge amount of money, considering we had something like 2,000 of them.
Mm.
At the time, the bank was really rich. And the boss came along and went, why don't we just all have colour screens? And we all went, yeah, okay. And so, you know, 2,000 colour screens at £4,000 a pop each. Nobody There was absolutely no reason to have them.
No.
They didn't do anything.
Black and white will do you perfectly well for numbers.
It was just worked, you know. And now you could have it in green and blue as well.
Well, one of my popular complaints at the office, we've got a printer contract with a company, and I'm going to get the numbers wrong, but it's something like 0.05 of a pence for a black and white page to be printed.
Yeah.
And it's 5.5 pence for a colour page to be printed. And the argument goes because there's more toner in, yeah, in that, and the colour toner is more expensive than the black and white, whatever. But everybody in the business wants to print everything in colour, even if it's for internal stuff. Mm. And you go, we had a bill for 500 quid one month for printing.
Right.
And I just went, we haven't had 500 quid's worth of value out of that. Now, we're a multi-million turnover business. But by looking at that and just going, come on, lads, we can do better than that.
Yeah.
Black and white printing only, unless it's for client presentation work or it's a graph and you need to actually be able to read the axes. Why are you bothering?
Yeah.
And people were going, I didn't realise it was costing so much. Well, that's why I keep going on about it.
There's a company I know, quite a large company in London, and they've just taken away all the paper clips and things like that that people were using, and tape and things, and you have to request it now, and you know, whereas before you could just get it willy-nilly.
Yeah.
So just the cost of paper clips was
I used to do a famous story when I was involved in this kind of thing. Delta Airlines
I remember them.
Saved $1 million a year by removing one olive from all the meals they served.
That's incredible. Yeah. Well,
but if you think about it, I mean, this is why they're so careful about car production and stuff like that.
Yeah.
One small component recall or whatever can actually bankrupt a company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mind you, Paul, without wishing to steer the conversation in your show particularly, I am really here to talk about tax year.
Yes,
well,
you are, and we're going to.
I know that tax is a sort of really exciting subject that'll have all your listeners really weak at the knees with excitement, but we perhaps ought to say a little bit about that before we close.
Yeah, let's go for it.
What a great thing.
Yeah.
So, you want me to say something now?
I want to talk about taxes.
Talk about tax. Well, tax is really that taxing, contrary to what Hector says or whatever the icon is from HMRC.
We've had a recent little flurry of the government messing about with national insurance, which is a tax.
Which is a win.
For some.
Well, if there's less national insurance at the bottom, everybody pays less national insurance.
I don't.
Well, you weren't paying yourself very much salary then.
No, but even before that.
You're paying
yourself
dividends.
No. See, I'm older than you.
Yeah,
I don't have to pay national insurance. I've retired.
Sorry, Paul, I've forgotten how old you really are.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Looking at you, I can see that you are. Yeah, but there you go. But, so national insurance has come down, which is a win, and that's going to hopefully feed through and people will feel...
It's a win for some.
Yeah, it's a win.
Not for us old people.
It's a win for younger people.
Yeah, but how will national insurance coming down affect future... if the government are not getting that kind of payment, or how will it affect?
Yeah, but it's not a hypothecated. Well, it kind of slightly is, but national insurance doesn't pay for your pension.
No, but it pays for your health, doesn't it? Isn't it the health? Where does it go?
Well, I mean, it's a very interesting question. When national insurance was set up, it was a hypothecated tax.
It
is now effectively just become general taxation by another route.
The
philosophy, well, it's not very stealthy. It's on your bloody paystep every month. But the interesting bit, and I've voted Tory all my life, so if Damien Green's listening, sorry, mate, but we now have the situation where they're contemplating serious tax cuts as an electoral bribe to try and get people convinced that this is a good thing. Now, tax cuts have their place. They encourage people to spend more of their own money, which stimulates the economy, and that's a good thing. And I get that. But now I'm going to ask a question, and the answer will be deathly silence. Name one sector of UK PLC that is properly functioning as at the moment.
No.
Deathly silence.
Yeah.
So we've come driving on roads that are full of potholes.
Yeah.
The justice system is broken. The
police gritters
system is
this
broken.
Morning.
There's no gritters on the road. Mm. The NHS, don't get me started. There are all these areas of our public life, civil, the state support system, the whole bit, is broken.
Did you mention train drivers, transport?
Well, train drivers are earning 60,000 a year. I think they've got enough. That's a different conversation. I'll probably get shot by train drivers on the way home. But, I mean, you know, there is a real issue about a philosophical question about do we tax less and let people spend their own money and hope that that drives enough growth to build up public the public purse so we can spend more money on services, which is an economic argument that has merit and may work, or do we hold back some of the tax cuts now and reallocate it to fix the potholes in the road, give the nurses a decent pay rise, and put more money in the NHS?
I see where you're coming from.
Hold on.
I see where you're coming from, but my question is, you're quite right, we have some of the worst public services imaginable.
Ever.
Yeah, ever. And the highest tax ever.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, is it just a question of throwing more money at it, or have we got to start being a lot smarter about this? You know, for me, one of the problems is that a lot of, especially local authorities, overextend themselves, getting involved in things that have nothing to do with the remit of a local authority.
Such as?
Well, just all kinds of woke nonsense and councils funding various street parties and stuff like that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, to defend local councils, the government has been putting more and more pressure on them to provide more and more social care, more and more education services. Kent County Council is nearly £1 billion in debt, but you know, they can't fill the potholes in the roads and stuff like that. But every week they announce some new grant for something.
It's a real challenge. Yeah. I think that is part of the problem. Mm. But there is a massive, massive, massive change in our society, which is when they introduced the state pension system in 1945, you retired at 65, you drew your pension for 5 years until you were 70, and then you were dead.
Yeah.
That is the reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we now are all expecting to live, theoretically, I ought to live to 85, 90. Now, I'm fat, I'm blood pressure, you know, I might not make it. But in theory, I ought to live that long. And those last 20 years are going to be the most expensive on the health service and the most expensive on this and that. And in theory, that's where this money is going. We have an aging society that requires more money in pensions, more money in support, more money in health, more money in this. And so the tax take is there.
I'm smiling because I've thought of a conspiracy theory for that. Is that why the government is trying to kill us all off with all these pandemics and stuff? We're going, we can't have them living longer. It's killing the fiscal policy here. Let's introduce some kind of disease and get them all dead.
Well, they might be trying that in China, but I hope they're not trying that there. But we used to say that about the post office, so who knows?
Yeah.
But it is very interesting that the cost of running the country has gone up exponentially because of the ageing population. Well, and the net result of that is they need the higher taxes.
Yeah. Yes, I understand what you're saying. But again, I was talking about this earlier with the debt run up by local authorities. So many businesses, my businesses are all suffering. I don't have a single business that's functioning well at the moment. And most of that is due to exorbitant energy costs.
Yeah.
Which, of course, local authorities are paying as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so.
And wages.
Wages are a bit of a. They're a problem, aren't they? Because people have to live. And if you're going to force the cost of living up high, then you're going to have to keep forcing the cost of wages up.
Yeah,
because it's a
wage price spiral. The age old story of the 70s that we never thought we'd see come. I mean, the good news is now that inflation is looking towards 3%.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be back with 3% inflation, which means that we've had this hard shock of inflation, largely down to the Ukraine war and to some degree down to unwinding slowly in China after lockdown. Mm. But that's sort of come and gone now. Mm. But the trouble is, and this is the bit that people live and the economists and the politicians to some degree forget, just because inflation is low doesn't mean to say that relative to 2 years ago, life isn't still a hell of a lot more expensive than it was.
Yeah.
You know, if it cost you £10,000 a year to live 2 or 3 years ago, it now costs you £13,000 to live. So you're now in this situation where it's costing you an extra £3,000 a year to live, but inflation's low. Well, it doesn't help me. I'm still £3,000 a year out of pocket. So unless my wages have gone up by £3,000, I've got a problem.
Funnily enough, I said to someone the other day, they were saying about a cost of living crisis. And I just said, I don't think we have a cost of living crisis. I think we have a cost of government crisis. You know, everything is costing more. One, because government forced it to cost more in some instances. With things like net zero and all that nonsense, and the way that they organise energy, you know, they talk a lot about green and renewable energy, and then they set the price cap at the most expensive price of gas. How does that work? Yeah. You know, well, it's just bonkers.
And also, the high street is suffering because people are staying home and they're not spending.
Mm. And they don't, well, but that, mainly because you can get it cheaper and easier on Amazon. And you don't have to pay inflated parking
charges. Yeah, but I'm talking about hospitality. People are staying at home with a bottle of wine and the takeaway.
They've got no money because,
So the restaurants are really, really, and the cafes.
And the problem there is that this is where, you know, it comes back to what Simon was saying about having to pay more tax for more services. But the problem is, the contra argument to that is, as people have less and less money to spend, they don't spend it out in the private sector, in coffee shops and pubs and restaurants and bars. Yeah. They go broke, and more people end up unemployed, or there's less businesses, and less businesses pay less tax. So you're on a downward spiral as well.
Yeah.
It's a very delicate balance to try and get all of that right.
Which our government don't seem to be capable of doing.
Well, no government is. Really, you know, because most of them just overreact. And of course, a lot of these issues take longer to unwind than they actually have in power. So they don't care. You know, they just set it up for the next lot.
They're too difficult. Yeah. Problem. Yeah. But I saw it today and I can't find it quickly, but I think it was the National Audit Office published only today a set of stats that said government could save £20 billion a year. Basically by using better and more updated IT and by organising themselves better. £20 billion in bad management.
Yeah.
Now, you can spend ages unpicking that. There are so many stories. The bit that drives me nuts, and maybe we'll get back onto year-end tax planning that we've sidetracked again, but the bit that sort of stays with me, I've always remembered Priti Patel getting done for bullying her top civil servant.
Yeah.
Well, I come to this sort of funny idea. I have a business. I employ staff. Hmm. I say to my member of staff, would you please do that? They say, yes, Simon, certainly. And they run off and do it. No problem. I get a new member of staff. Please do that. Oh, I'm not sure I want to do that. Well, hang on, mate. You know, I'll pay your salary. Do the job, please.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Well, blooming do it now. Well, you're bullying me.
Yeah.
But so the same thing applies to civil service. If you're the minister in charge, you're the person elected by the government to run the department, you to say to somebody who's on £250,000 a year plus, please go and do that. And he says, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
And then he plays a bully card. If he just said, yes, Home Secretary, I'll go and do what you want, that would have been the end of the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there is a real issue within our civil service that has got to the stage where it thinks it runs the country and it's doing so many things badly, wrongly, with old-fashioned technology and no strategic thought, that we've got a massive problem. And it's going to
as we've just seen with the post office scandal and various other scandals, absolutely. We need wholesale reform.
We need lots of Alan Bates. I mean, he was amazing, is amazing.
Absolutely, but it's not just that. It's paying attention to what people are telling you and applying some common sense to it. For me, what seems to have gone out the window is any form of common sense at all. And these organisations will tell you black is white, and everybody stands there going, that's rubbish.
And common sense isn't that common, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we're
year-end tax planning.
Year-end tax planning. That's what we're here to talk about. Yeah.
In the remaining 10 minutes,
get it in there.
As we've got onto our little political rants. Yeah. Well, there's a few things to think about. I mean, obviously, if you're self-employed, or indeed if you fill in a tax return, you should realise that you've got until the 31st of January to get it in and pay your tax, or you'll be fined.
Yep.
And it's almost got to the stage where they make more money out of the fines than they do out of tax. Now, that's a gross exaggeration, but they make a lot of money out of fines. So get your tax return in. Online, if you've done the work, it should be relatively straightforward to get it done. But get it done. The number of accountants, if have people phoning them up now, say, oh, have you got time to get my tax return in? Well, you know, I asked you for the information 6 months ago. You've only just got round to it. So that's a biggie.
Yeah.
But the real year-end tax planning is that's just putting the record in for the previous tax year. We are currently in the tax year 6th April 2023 to the 5th of April 2024. We're in the 23-24 tax year, and we are running up towards the end of that tax year, and now is the time to be thinking about what actions you should be taking financially to mitigate your tax bill as effectively as you can. Now, I'm a financial advisor, and all financial advisors ever talk about at this time of year is use your annual ISA allowance.
All right.
It's £20,000, but the money that goes in there grows totally free of income tax. It grows totally free of capital gains tax. It's your money, and it's not the sort of tax arrangement that Jimmy Carr got into that's going to get you on the front page of the paper. This is government-sponsored, government-encouraged way of mitigating your tax bill. Mm-hmm. And if you want to pay more tax, that's fine. But if you don't want to pay tax and you want to keep more of your savings for yourself, use your ISA allowance. You've got one. Your partner's got one. If you love your partner and trust your partner, then you could give them £20,000 and they could put it into an ISA in their name. You don't have joint ISAs, they're only individuals. So those that's £40,000 you can get rid of today. Then, of course, the other thing that you can think about is pension contributions. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody thinks about pensions as a means of providing an income in retirement. And fundamentally, that's what they're there for. If you are fortunate enough to have other resources, then actually the pension is the bit you spend last, because a pension is a separate legal person to you as an individual. Mm-hmm. So if you have a house and some savings and it's worth more than £500,000 if you're an individual or £1 million if you're a married couple, your family will pay 40% tax on the excess over £500,000 for an individual, £1 million for a couple. Mm. And that can be a hell of a lot of money. And it's got, the check's got to be written and paid to HMRC before anybody else gets anything, which is a bit of an issue, sometimes the reason for probate delays. Mm. However, your pension sits separate to that. So you could have £1 million in your pension. You drop dead, your wife drops dead, that £1 million can be passed inheritance tax free directly to your children immediately with no need for probate.
Right.
So come now, you can put up to £60,000 as a private individual or 100% of your earnings, whichever is the lower, into a pension right here, right now. If you are in the unbelievably fortunate situation of having personal income in excess of £60,000 and you have not used your full allowance in previous years, and as a little by the by, you also had a pension in existence that was capable of receiving a contribution in the years from which you are carrying forward, you can carry forward up to three years of previously unused relief. So you could theoretically put in a six-figure sum into your pension. If you are a limited company director and you've got money in your company, you can again put money into pension. It ring fences it from creditors, it provides for your future, and it gets rid of your corporation tax bill. And on top of that, there's no income tax. It's not a P11D benefit. Yeah. So there's a whole, you know, just those few basic ideas. Very, very easy, very, very simple, dead straightforward. Everybody should be doing before the end of the tax year. It presupposes you've got the money to do it.
It's all very good common sense and very true. What some people balk at is that they just don't have the they don't see that they have the wherewithal to stump up the cash to do it.
Well, and if you haven't got the money and you've just got to concentrate on your personal budget, then concentrate on your personal budget. That's the important stuff.
I suppose there's a moot point about that as well. If you haven't got the money, you're not going to pay tax on it anyway because you haven't got any money.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, you know, the other sorts of things that you can do, you can start getting a bit more clever. If you've got savings accounts and you've got one partner who's the income earner and one partner who's perhaps staying at home looking after kids, and I'm very careful to say one partner, I'm not ascribing a sex to that, I've learned that lesson now, then make sure that the savings income is in the name of the non-tax-paying partner. Because you've got a tax benefit there. So it's definitely, you know, there are things that you can do that really help. Last but by no means least.
Yeah.
Capital gains tax, a tax that an increasing number of people are starting to pay, is really coming to the forefront of planning now. Because only 3 years ago, you could earn £12,000 increase in value, capital gain, from buying an asset for £10,000 and selling it for £22,000. And you could have that £12,000 gain totally free of tax. They've cut the allowance. £3,000.
Wow.
And that, you know, so that's all of a sudden nearly lots and lots and lots of people, lots of our clients are now having to factor in capital gains tax into their planning.
Right.
And they're having to think very seriously about what they do and how they do it and make sure that they're ring fencing their money as much as possible into ISA and pension, where your capital gains are completely tax free.
Right.
And that's a really good thing to do.
Right.
There you go. So if you're worried about your tax position, what you really ought to do is seek independent financial advice. And if you're based in the South, there will be a Tallis financial advisor ready, willing and able to help you and talk you through the pros and cons of such an investment.
So how does it start, Simon? Do you have a fee for the first initial consultation, or how does it start for us?
Well, the short answer is it depends. We will always speculate a half-hour conversation with any prospective new client at our expense, because no meeting is free, because effectively financial advisors sell time. Mm. So if I'm sitting with you for half an hour, somebody's paying for that. Either the company's paying for it or you're paying for that. Now, if somebody comes in and says, I've got this problem, can you fix it? And I think, actually, I could probably fix that problem. I'm going to say, okay, well, I can give you the answer, but you're going to pay me a price for doing that. Do you want the answer? This is the price. And you can either say yes or no. Mm. If you want to come and have a general chat and sound us out, see whether you like the cut of our jib, whether we sound like we know what we're talking about, then come in and have that conversation. And then we'll quote a price for what we do, and we can work on an hourly rate. We can work on a percentage of the amount invested, which sounds a lot like commission, but it doesn't exist in investment business anymore. But that's another longer story. It's a rant about the financial services regulator. I have to be very careful what I say about that, because obviously he can control whether I can do my work job anymore. But effectively, we will have a conversation with prospective clients. We never charge anybody one penny piece before they know what they are going to be letting themselves in for. So we do all sorts of things. We do equity release for older people who are trying to get money out of their houses. We are an independent broker of equity release mortgages, so we've got the whole market available. We've got special software, costs us a fortune. We can see who's got the best deal.
Right.
Equity release getting better, or because it used to have such a bad name?
It got loads better about 15-20 years ago. I can't remember exactly when. I remember in the 80s, the equity release was not a regulated product, and people could end up doing equity release and their family ending up owing more than the house was worth, which is a horrendous situation. Yeah. It should never have been allowed to happen. Yeah. I mean, regulators and the government were asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
Many years on, move on. We now have the Equity Release Council, something called Safe Home Income Plans, a marvellous expression, SHIP. So a great, great thing. I did say SHIP. SHIP plan. And effectively, those SHIP plans guarantee that you will never have negative equity, you'll never own more than the value of your house. But also, they're quite careful about the maximum amount they'll lend.
Right.
So effectively, if you're both aged about 65, in broad terms, you can borrow about 20-25% of the value of your house. So you've got a £400,000 house, you could raise £100,000. What you would probably be better off doing, if you've got no particular place to go for that, is to say, I'll have £30,000 now, which is the car and the kitchen or whatever I need to do, and then I'll have a facility to draw further money in future years if and when I need it. So I'm only paying for it when I need it. I'm not paying interest on money I don't need.
Is there a tax obligation for that money?
No.
That you took out?
Okay. No. The only thing to watch is if you qualify for benefits and you put some of that money in the bank, you can mess up your benefit entitlement. And that's one of the things that our advisors look at very carefully when we're assessing individual client circumstances for looking at equity release. So we want to make sure that people don't borrow money out of their house and then wave goodbye to a pile of benefits they would otherwise have qualified for.
Sure.
It's actually in our paperwork. We have checked that there are no benefits that this client is going to lose. It's right. Really, really important. So people got to go in with their eyes open and their advisors got to know what they're talking about. But fortunately, at Tallis, we like to think that we do. Cool. We've done a few of those.
I'm sure you do. Simon, as always, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. We could go on forever about all kinds of things. And when I get you here, I always think, oh, blimey, I need to extend this show by another hour because there's loads of questions I want to ask you, but we've run out of time.
Well, you can always ask me back another time soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've just had a tweet from Kent County Council. Their gritters will be out tomorrow. And I said, it's too late.
Yeah.
Our guest has just seen a motorcycle.
We influence people on this show, believe me.
Yeah.
Simon, thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, as always. Do check out Tallis IFA. The links to Tallis are on the Kent Business Radio website.
TallisIFA.com, TallisIFA.com.
Yep, there you go. But the link's there anyway, so you don't even have to remember it. You just go into the website and click on the link. That's it, really.
Yeah.
We're just getting warmed up.
I know.
Yeah, well, come on again. I mean, there's so much we need to ask you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We love to have Simon on, and I'd like to get him on a regular basis. That does predicate me remembering not I've invited him on.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention that my appearance here was so important that the only person who didn't know I was coming today was Paul.
Yeah,
social media people knew I was coming because I saw it posted on Facebook for today's show.
Right.
I had an email from Paul confirming that I was supposed to come on today's show. Oh, yes, I had an email from Paul, not one that I'd sent to him saying I was coming, one he had sent to
this anyway, show is run by Fujitsu.
Anyway, we've reached the end of the show, thankfully. We'll be back next week. Thank you.
Enough of that.
Thank you to Julia, Tom and Simon for joining
and
the show.
And Steve Hayes. Yeah. Steve Hayes.
And
thank
to,
you.
Yeah. To my lovely co-host, Jules. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.